Daniel Schwarzman, Director of the Seeking Alpha Marketplace, doing our Coronavirus Roundtable Series. I'm joined today by Joe Albano, who is the author of Tech Cash, a Tech Insider's Stock Picks Using Stocks, Options, and Chart Analysis. Joe, good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, Daniel. How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
So let's jump in. We did a tech roundtable recently, and tech has been, you know, fascinating sector to watch. It's NASDAQ is up on the year. You made the point that I thought was interesting. I wanted to hear how you thought this plays out for Q2, because you made the point that companies that didn't give guidance, that just kind of said it's too hard, seem to get rewarded, and the ones who actually tried to quantify what's going on got hurt. So how do you think that plays out as we go into Q2, where the bill actually comes due?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think a lot of the stuff that I noticed with guidance was happening in the mid to late April timeframe and early May timeframe. And then NVIDIA gave guidance and it wasn't punished. It's off its highs, but it made new highs following it. And it's come back down a little bit. I think it's been a healthy small correction. I'm looking for a little bit more. But I think that was kind of the end of that train where guidance was getting punished. You know, we saw it with Intel, we saw it with AMD, we saw it with Western Digital. And especially with Western Digital, minus, you know, the dividend being suspended, which I can account for, you know, it deserved probably a decent amount of drop, even though it's starting to get priced in at, you know, around $38 a share. The guidance was in line, if not a little more robust. And I was like, man, it got punished pretty good. So I started looking into that, and I picked up a few shares down in the mid to high 30s. And ever since then, I started seeing Wall Street kind of back off that a little bit, and everything's starting to kind of level out. AMD, Intel, they're still, you know, hovering where they were before earnings, but nothing great, nothing surprising. So I think the earnings about that with guidance has kind of backed off. Now, when they go to actually announce those earnings come Q2 over the summer, I think we're going to get a little bit of a mixed bag. Unless anybody really blows out the guidance that they gave just a month ago, I think they're going to limp along still, and Wall Street's not going to really pay too much attention to them. You know, AMD has been the darling for the last 2 years now. And it can't really catch a bid like it used to. You know, it's been lagging, especially some of the other ones like Apple or Netflix. And I think a lot of that is going to be the tell if they can blow out that guidance that they gave. How conservative were they is the real question. And if they were super conservative, knowing that the market is probably going to punish them a little bit, but on the back end of it, they can come and really blow those numbers out and up guidance for Q3, I think they'll be absolved and Wall Street will start rewarding them again. But I think there's just too much unknown right now. Obviously, Micron, and we'll probably get to this in a little bit, they brought their guidance way up. And I think this could be the start of that train kind of heading in the other direction, starting to build momentum where, hey, and everything's not as bad as they thought. And maybe they were really sandbagging Q2. And by all means, they probably should, because it's been a hard, probably one of the toughest quarters in the last decade to really understand and to get ahead of. So I wouldn't be surprised if those companies sandbagged it and they really didn't give them everything they thought and played it conservatively.
Well, it's also really interesting we don't normally think about, or I don't normally think about, the cadence of earnings season and the fact that some companies, Intel, I think, reports pretty early. NVIDIA just reported last week. And that doesn't seem to matter so much, except when you're in an extreme time of uncertainty. And by the day, almost, things are becoming clearer as far as where things are going. And so the guidance that Intel might have been able to provide would have had to have been more conservative by definition as compared to Micron or NVIDIA, where they're actually getting new information and able to up what they're doing or what they're
and
doing.
Intel gave pretty good guidance. Like, they kind of beat and raised and upped their guidance by quite a bit. They didn't get punished quite as much, but it's not one of those stocks that moves 10% in a day, not like an AMD. So I think if they were conservative and they come and, you know, blow out that guidance, I think there's a bigger story to tell there.
So that brings us to semiconductors in general, I think, because a lot of the story has been about software, right? A lot of the work from home plays, the Zooms, the Slacks, whatever, the Datadog, all these companies that are sort of on the back end of supporting people's ability to work from anywhere. When you look at just the ETFs as a representative, I pulled this up yesterday. Software is up about 13% for the year. Hardware is down about the same amount, and semiconductors is right in the middle. And, you know, wherever that heads, I just want, you argued in the roundtable that there is demand there for semiconductors. I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about what you're seeing and how you're making that case.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think you have it pretty much on point that software, it's easy to kind of tell because when everybody's working or learning from home, what are they using? They're using software, they're using cloud, providing software as a service. They're using all that kind of stuff. And it's easy to quantify, right? 300 million Americans, 350 million Americans now all at home. They're on a computer, they're on their internet. They're using software to connect to these other devices. We're using Zoom. You know, everybody's using Zoom. Everybody's using some kind of VPN to work. And all that kind of is easy to pick on, right? It becomes low-hanging fruit, so let's bid up all those stocks. Then you get to the opposite side. You get to hardware. You're like, okay, what are the consumers spending? Well, they're not spending much because maybe they lost their job. Or maybe, you know, take mobile handsets, right? Look at Apple. Look at Samsung. And they look at the refresh cycle and they're like, oh, people stopped buying phones. Sure, they could probably go 6 months with the same phone that they had and push out their upgrade. Now you go to the middle and you see semiconductors, especially memory semiconductors, and they're providing to both sides, right? So you have, on the one side, you have, they're providing memory for the computer, the laptop, the computer, whatever we're using. And pretty much everybody's on the same page about that. I could hold off on an upgrade on a laptop unless they weren't prepared to work or learn from home. Then everybody went out and bought it. So there was this spike in consumer demand for about a few weeks where, you know, companies were buying 5,000 laptops at a clip, and that drove up demand in the interim. Then you have on the other side, you have the cloud providers, and everybody's going to be using all that cloud capacity. Now, that cloud capacity requires servers. So you have Micron and SK Hynix, and you have Samsung in the middle there, and they're providing to both sides. So you see which one is the bigger pull and then which one is the higher margin. On hardware, you're having lower margin, but kind of high volume. And on server, you're having higher margin and perhaps lower volume because you're only selling to the OEMs that are building servers, or you're selling to the Microsofts, the Amazons, the Facebooks. And depending on their demand, they're looking to expand their data center capacity, right? So they weren't ready for 350 million Americans to all jump on their servers. And in some cases, they were buying capacity elsewhere, other countries, wherever it needed to come from. And we saw this with Zoom. You know, Zoom was starting to route stuff through China, and everybody got a little antsy about that, and rightfully so, especially with everything that's gone on and politically. So you have these semiconductors that are providing to both sides. The consumer side, we think, has kind of, you know, tapered off and outside of that pocket in the beginning of the whole pandemic, it's kind of lost that momentum. On the server side, everything just got drawn faster into this year. Anything that was going to be a refresh cycle for 2021, Facebook mentioned this, they weren't going to plan on doing a recycle of their data center until 2021. And that stuff probably had to get put on hold a little bit. And the CapEx that they had set aside now needs to get diverted a little bit. Now, even while Facebook lowered their CapEx projections for 2020, I'm sure the slice of the pie in that CapEx went elsewhere and got diverted to maybe more networking, maybe more servers. Data centers was a difficult one because they had to stop construction because of the shelter in place kind of thing. So it's kind of a catch 22. It's like we need more capacity, so we're just going to upgrade in place instead, as opposed to building out these data centers that we had plans that we can't continue to work on. in Europe, in America, it didn't matter. Everybody had to kind of stop construction. So Micron there in the middle, they're obviously, now that we've seen their guidance raise, and what I've been following with my subscribers is the DRAM contract pricing. And it caught me by surprise. I knew it was going to continue to go up in April, but it shot up 12% in April, all while spot pricing was on the decline all month. And that made me realize, oh, hey, there's a big difference in where these purchases and where this demand is coming from. And the contract market is red hot. We haven't seen it this hot since February of 2018. So we're talking over 2 years ago, we haven't seen an increase, a double-digit increase in DRAM contract pricing. So it looks like the data center is winning out against the consumer side of it. And that's where the higher margin is. Now, add on top of that, things like NVIDIA, where they're using GPUs to create this data center module, and the new A100 they just came out with that has, forget the number, I think there was 8 of them on one board. And, you know, it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. So those are high value, that's prize money for companies like Micron, who are providing that graphics DRAM. And that is interesting. Now we're getting a push both on the server and the graphics side. It's outdoing the consumer and the mobile side. And by the time this kind of gives up a little bit on the server side, the mobile and the consumer demand is going to come back, because we're going to be in the latter half of 2020, and we're getting a seasonally strong time for consumer and mobile handsets. We'll be past most of the COVID-19 shelter in place and economic shutdown. And I think they're both going to kind of rise. And I think a lot of analysts are predicting a fall off in the second half, where I think we're going to continue to go strong. As a matter of fact, I just saw something from Taiwan Semiconductor and Nanya. They were expecting DRAM contract pricing to continue to surge in the third quarter. So I think that's pretty telling that we're not even through the second quarter, and they're expecting the third quarter to continue on this momentum. Now, it'd be interesting to see what the May contract pricing is. And it just got published today from TrendForce. For the institutions that have that subscription, they could see that information today. We might get some articles out on the web, which is how I found the April contract pricing during April. So normal people like you and me who don't have a subscription, we found out April's contract pricing today. You know, we're at the end of May, so you find out a month before. I think if it's still surging within high single digits or low double digits, we'll get a few people to say something on the internet. And that would be really telling if we get follow through from April's double digit jump and May follows through with that. I think it's hard not to be in any of those semiconductors that are working with memory. And Micron is obviously the easiest one to invest in.
So I was going to ask why Micron raising their guidance was a big deal, but I think you've already kind of covered that. But what I'm interested in hearing about, when you think about that, those trends, work from home, the software plays have been pretty obvious, right? I don't know where Zoom is now, but it's obviously rocketed up crazy because everybody's using it, etc. But that requires server capacity. You're sort of playing the semiconductors because they eventually supply the servers rather than whoever is building out the servers. Is that the right way to, they're selling into AWS or whoever else to build these servers? And you feel that Micron, because it's got a foot in both camps, is sort of the place that you can play both the current period and the renormalization at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's kind of a dual play in different time frames, right? Right now, you can see that the server, and obviously the market's forward looking, so it knows about the server at this point. And it bit up Micron 2 days ago now, where it was down 3-4%, and it shot up 6-8%. That is the kind of move I expect Micron to have when it announces those kinds of things in this environment. But now that the market knows about that, it's going to be looking at the company's fiscal fourth quarter, which goes into the seasonally strong second half of 2020. And it's going to be interesting, just like I talked about, where we're going to see the renormalization of handset mobile kind of demand and the consumer demand when everybody is getting back to work when they're more confident in their personal cash investments and things like that, where they can go back to discretionary spending. I think we're going to see a pickup there. And at the same time, let's not forget 5G is going to begin rolling out this refresh cycle. And I don't think it'll be anything crazy. Like, I wouldn't bet 5G 2020 is going to be everything that we're going to see. I think it's going to be closer to 2022 when we start to get to that peak. However, I think the market is going to start looking at 2021 while the refresh cycle in 2020 is happening. And it may be disconnected from kind of the so-so demand that is going to get picked up with 5G now. You know, there's not a lot of rollout in the United States trying to connect to 5G. A lot of it has been static, like Verizon. They put a jump pack in your house and you can use in your house 5G. But on a mobile 5G basis, we're still pretty very much rolling that out. So I don't think we're going to see a huge jump. I think the international market first for like Apple is going to see a bigger refresh cycle for 5G, and America will lag a little bit. So you can kind of play a little of both timeframes, but I think it's going to be, you have to get in ahead of that, right? So if you wait till, you know, October, November of this year, you're already going to be behind Wall Street's curve, because they're going to be looking at 2021 and they're going to see how well international did and how well America can do then in the 5G refresh. So Micron's going to be positioned for both of those things, right? The normalization of consumer demand and the 5G rollout. I don't see a reason why you wouldn't want to get into it here in the mid to upper 40s, where it's been back and forth and kind of range bound for the last, probably the whole year now, 5-6 months. And not understanding that you're going to miss it before it actually happens. So I think it's a twofold play. I think the reward is going to outweigh the risk. I think we've already seen what the risk could be. The server can carry along Micron while consumer demand is somewhere in the middle or flat to down. And you have all these other catalysts that are coming in 2020, latter half of 2020 and 2021 that you're going to want to be on board now with, because by the time you see the results, the train's already going to leave the station.
I feel like you have to ask with Micron, what about the supply side? Is there any risk of obviously you've piled up a number of compelling demand cases for memory chips, but is there any risk that that leads to a concurrent oversupply situation?
Sure. I think that's a very fair question. You have to ask about both sides. And I think what we could see on the supply side is with rising prices that there is limited supply. Graphics DRAM is going to get consumed with the console refresh cycle, with NVIDIA's push into data center, with their Mellanox acquisition and their ability to now push even more into data center. Their data center is going to be their new gaming division. It's on a rate that gaming hasn't been able to do since at least the cryptocurrency boom. So I think data centers, where if you're going to invest in NVIDIA, you have to be looking at data center. Gaming is going to be somewhere in the middle. They might do a refresh from the 2000 series to a 3000 series with the RTX cards. But I think their moneymaker is now going to be transition. I mean, you could see it in their M&A. They're moving towards acquisitions that are data center driven. But as far as the supply side for Micron, they're not building out new supply. Sanjay said something to the effect of their buying of new equipment is down 40%. Now, even if they were not to be down on equipment purchases that much, their CapEx is going towards node transitions. And what that means, you go from one node, which is X big, to another node, which is Y big, to another node, which is Z big, and they're getting incrementally smaller. So you're fitting more transistors on a die. And what that means is it takes more equipment to do the extra steps that are required in the new node. So it's a misnomer to look at purchases of equipment necessarily, because in order to transition to another node, you'd need more equipment. But that more equipment takes up more clean room space, which means less space for more wafer starts. So naturally, through this progression, you actually reduce supply. So if they're buying equipment for node transitions, they're not increasing supply, they're actually reducing supply. So as long as none of these companies are adding more on the front end We're adding clean room space to add more lines to start more wafers to make up for the loss that they're getting. They're reducing supply. So we're in a constant dwindling supply situation ever since the end of 2018 when companies started pulling back their CapEx. And from then on, we have not seen an increase in supply. So supply is continually dwindling and nobody's looking to increase it. Samsung, nobody's looking for that increase because they're looking for the higher margins, and the higher margins are coming through those node transitions. So I could say that and nobody would know the difference, right? So I can't tell you what Micron or Samsung or SK Hynix is doing because we're not privy to that. We can only know what they release. But you can see it in the pricing. If pricing is up double digit percentage month over month, demand is either through the roof or supply is down and demand is up, and they're both kind of feeding into each other. So I don't think demand is so far high because we would start seeing inventory increases, which is the other risk that we'll probably get into. But I think supply is on a constant average downward trend because of the way that these companies have started approaching their build out, and more clean room space in the past meant more wafer starts, which meant more supply. But now more clean room space means more equipment, which means better node transitions and ramping, which means less wafers to start in the beginning. And naturally we have a decrease in that wafer output, which is what everybody's looking at.
Okay. Very, very interesting. I have to confess, I'm going to need to watch that back to trace through all the different steps of the production process. But it's always when you see the pricing go up, like it's not a random walk.
So. Right. Exactly.
So any other, we sort of got into essentially the trend of servers, right? Server increase as a big trend here. Any other trends that you're watching or any changes you're making where you're saying, I'm going to stay away from this part of tech because of current climate, or anything you've done since February as far as your outlook on the sector?
Yeah, I think if we talk about the stay-at-home ones, we look at Netflix or we look at Zoom. I was recommending Zoom in the mid-60s back in December. And while I expected it to increase and see a move, I did. I mean, nobody saw this coming. I can't admit that I saw this coming, but the increase was dramatic. You know, magnitudes of 3 and 4. The stock price followed. You know, up to $180, $170 a share. Back down to $160 or something this week. I can't say I'm going to continue to recommend those kind of things. Netflix, you know, up near all-time highs. Zoom, you know, obviously every week is a new adventure with that stock. And I would say if you were buying, when I told my subscribers back in the 60s and 70s, you have to trim at this point. I can't recommend that you continue to buy because they're going to see some fall off in their participants and how many meetings they have and their active accounts. As schools go back into session in buildings, as people go back to work. Now, it won't be as dramatic as some other people think. My company that I work for has said, we're indefinitely working from home. You look at Twitter, you look at Facebook, you look at all those companies. There's no reason for those employees to be in an office building. That's fixed overhead costs that companies are going to reevaluate and then maybe change and adapt and be like, why do we need offices? We don't need offices. Everybody could do their work from home. So you're going to continue with that kind of momentum, but you're going to have fall off no matter what happens. So once the market kind of gets a whiff of that, it's going to have to resettle. I think Zoom and the likes of those, I think Netflix is going to be able to manage itself and hold it. Some of those things you don't give back. You're like, oh, I have entertainment now. It's not like I don't need entertainment now that I'm out of the house again. It may be less frequent, but that monthly subscription doesn't go away. So it's one and the same for Netflix. They don't really see that fall off as much. Now with Zoom, that may change. People may be like 6 months of it. I don't need it as much. I can piggyback on somebody else's and have them set up my meetings. I don't need a host client for every person. And I think Zoom are going to get hit a little harder. Netflix will maintain and probably do just fine. But the other sector that I'm looking at is like the Uber and the Lyfts, the ride sharing, but the food delivery service, like the DoorDashes and things like that, where I think everybody thought it was kind of a novelty of like, I can sit home and order 3 square meals a day and they all come to my door. I'll get the $10 subscription and all the fees are free. I think that'll go away. I think that was more going to be a novelty. I think there's a future for it. I just think that it kind of peaked. It's kind of like Bitcoin. It ran up so high so fast that it's going to have to come back down and it's going to have to consolidate. And I think those are the ones I'll stay away from. I don't like the likes of food delivery service in the short term or the medium term, but I think in the long term, it'll find that adoption and continue. It's just going to be a chart that looks like this, and then it's going to start slowly, you know, building back up again. So that's where I'm seeing some of those trends in the technology sector coming out of the pandemic, and some of the things I'll avoid or some of the things I'll stick with, like Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, the food delivery is just fascinating because I haven't done the math, but you read all the reports that it's really uneconomic for almost every party involved except the customer.
Yeah.
And
even then, if you don't get the subscriptions or if they don't have a subscription, you're paying $6-7 sometimes in fees plus a tip. Sometimes it's 20-30%, 40% of your meal that you're looking to purchase. It's really, even for the customer, it's not economical. They're going to have to find a model. And I'm not sure subscription is going to be the answer. It's going to have to be something a little different. First 3 of the month are free and then you start paying. I'm not sure if it's going to work on a linear basis like Netflix and Amazon Prime can get away with.
Well, it's interesting. I can't remember when I talked about this. I think maybe a podcast about Domino's. But when you're – and I have experience in the field. I was a pizza delivery driver for a summer. And when you're when you're operating out of the same shop, there's some inefficiency in the sense that you have to kind of keep going back to home base. But
yeah.
It's still like – it's hard to string together the deliveries, I imagine, in a way that you're gaining any efficiencies. It's just sort of it just seems like it's a tough business. And, Uber Eats is rumored to be trying to buy, or Uber is rumored to be trying to buy Grubhub. And
yep.
So we may see that consolidation, but it is just a interesting space given it's very present for us, but not apparently very profitable or very effective.
Yeah, and you bring up a really good point. Like you have UPS and FedEx and the post office, they have these routes planned out. They're based on algorithms of how efficient can you be to deliver packages. Packages are not food. You can't deliver food 6 hours later, 10 hours later. It needs to be within the hour or within a half hour. So it becomes a logistical nightmare that UPS is only at this level, but we need to be at this level to figure out food delivery service at that efficiency. And I just don't think we're there. Maybe autonomous driving kind of changes that paradigm. Again, we're still years away from efficiently doing that. So I think short term, medium term, I'm not buying into it. I think long term that may happen. And we start to see the inflection of somebody comes up with a good idea. And maybe it's not even one of the companies that are on the block right now. Maybe it's somebody else that invents something or comes up with a true algorithm that blows them out of the water. And maybe that's the one you look for. It's probably going to be one of those unicorn type of things where you can't invest in it when you want to. And then it's going to IPO like an Uber or Lyft at valuations that are not appealing. But I just don't think we're there yet when it comes to the food delivery service kind of thing. I wouldn't put somebody else's money or my money into that, knowing that the risks are outweighing the reward at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. The last question I wanted to ask you, you've kind of covered a few names already. You've mentioned Micron, NVIDIA. Are there any other names that you like in the market right now, or any other names that sort of where they are, you're excited about having in your portfolio, you'd look to add or anything like that?
Yeah, Micron and NVIDIA are always my kind of go-tos. I go and pick and choose when they're on certain, you know, points at their stock. Micron, anything in the 30s, I'm there, I'm adding. NVIDIA, I think at this point, anything back in the high 200s, if we get a correction that steep, I'm adding. I think where I want to be right now is with CyberArk, and I haven't talked about this too much, you know, publicly. Once in a while, I'll put an article out on CyberArk. It's usually twice a year or something like that. But my TechCast subscribers, they'll see that almost every other week. I'm talking about CyberArk and where it's at. And I think a lot of it, and I see analysts kind of downplaying CyberArk's participation in the security, cybersecurity kind of realm. I don't think they're giving it the credit that management is due to the acquisitions that they've done, moving to cloud provided services, DevOps kind of things outside of just, you know, VPN and privileged access management. And I think CyberArk here, just it's around $100 a share. I think anything in the 90s, I was pounding the table back in the 70s and 80s just recently, as whenever it dropped, probably in March with the rest of the market. Their business, they run very conservatively. So there's very little in the way of risk that I worry about from that management and their execution. And they always guide very conservatively. So the fact that they guided within consensus or just barely under, that shows that they're pretty, they know where the market's going. And I think it's difficult. I told my subscribers that, yes, it's difficult to sell when you're remote. You can't be on premise. You can't be doing a proof of concept and show, you know, 20, 30 people at a clip. Here's how the product works. And this is how I wow you. It's a little different trying to sell in this environment. I have vendors that I work with that are, you know, in states and other side of the country from me, but we're getting the project done. So it's not impossible. I think it just takes more attention and good execution. And I think CyberArk's management is good on the execution side of things. So I don't worry about them. I think we see CyberArk back to 150 by year's end, if not the beginning of Q1 of 2021. That's where it kind of left off before this pandemic hit, and the they gave okay guidance, which is what made it drop the first 10 or 15%, but the rest of the market dropped at 20 or 30% on the pandemic news. And I thought that was way overblown. And it turned out to be, because at $76 a share, it was being well undervalued with the amount of new logo acquisitions they were making. And it showed as the market kind of bid it back up to 110. And now it's kind of taken a nice healthy pullback, which is, I think, where I want to be, start acquiring some more shares in the 90s area. And that's what I'll tell my subscribers when it gets there, that's a good spot to be in. So I think CyberArk, it's good because it's in the software side of things. It's in the security side of things. It's got those two things going for it. And when the recovery comes around in the economy in the US, I think CyberArk is going to be there kind of in the mid to the front of the pack, kind of leading those stocks back towards new all-time highs.
The security theme I don't hear as much about, but you have to think that with work from home, work from everywhere, security does become a real important thing. You mentioned that they have cloud. Have they said anything yet? Or are you seeing anything that they are receiving something of an uptick in demand, or that they're, you know, we're working really hard because we've got more going on? Any indications like that?
Yeah, I think their cross-selling and their upselling has been pretty strong. I think people are getting caught up on the new logo acquisitions, and the new customers are kind of small, or they're small deals. I think what they're going to need is to do like what the Zooms did, and is to expand what their current market is, and what their customers now need is twice as big, right? So if everybody's working from home, they need that VPN kind of security. Now everybody needs a VPN, right? It's not just your offsite employees that are maybe 15, 20, 25% of your workforce that works remote permanently because you contract them from other places. Now it's your entire office that needs it. And they were giving away their VPN security for free between the months of April and May. And I think it actually expires this weekend. So I think once people get a taste of that, I think we're going to see a difference in subscriber rate going into, oh, this is really easy to use and it works. Their privilege access management has kind of become their core, kind of like gaming is for NVIDIA. But I think they're pushing into the DevOps kind of security and the remote security and the cloud security more, which is where their new driver and their new growth is going to be. So I see that their core is going to hold them, and I think it's going to do well. It's not going to be the growth driver that they had in the last 2 or 3 years that I've been pounding the table on. I think it's going to be now whatever organically they can come up with, whatever new acquisitions they come up with, that's where their strengths are going to be. And I see them doing well. The management has done fantastic with acquisitions and integrating and finding synergies between their products and the acquired products and those teams. And they're just a really phenomenal team to be executing on that. And I like I like stocks with good management, because I look at companies like Nutanix and their transition through subscription from appliances and hardware, and management has just not executed well. I see all the excuses in the book and the comments, and I'm sure I'll be attacked for that now, because I'm downplaying how well they've done, but they just didn't do it at the level that the market needed for the valuation that it was carrying. And I think CyberArk, I like that management better. I think a Nutanix management could use some outside help, things like that. So I put a big emphasis on good management, and it's hard to go wrong when you have management that's executed in the past and has a proven track record of acquisitions that are actually dealing growth organically and through synergies that they're getting.
Management's one of those things that seems like an intangible, oh, if they have a good enough product, you know, eventually a ham sandwich is going to manage this business, as Warren Buffett would stress test. But in a time like this, the value of capable, flexible, dynamic management comes to light. And so that's an interesting thing to really emphasize there.
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of technical chart analysis. I do a lot of looking at the trends of technology and where it's at. But it's hard to downplay management. You have to come back to that. If we're going to talk fundamentals, management is steering the ship no matter what you do. And that's why I like Micron, is because management has brought them into those high value, high margin products that the Micron of 3-4 years ago just did not have. They were just a commodity producer getting by on the cycle and hoping that they made ends meet. But with management from Sanjay and the CFO, they just have done a better job of steering that ship. And I see that with CyberArk, and I see that with NVIDIA. So it's hard to go against management that's executing and putting up the numbers for it. We can argue about what the valuation of companies like NVIDIA should be, but it's hard to go against the momentum, and that's where the charts come in, and that's where everything else comes in. So it falls outside of that. Under management, everything else is going to fall in. But it's hard to look away from a management that's running a ship really well.
Okay. Well said. So I've been speaking with Joe Albano, who is the author of Tech Cash. As he mentioned, you can check out more discussion on these stocks on his service. Just look it up on Seeking Alpha, on the marketplace, or in any search bar on the site. Joe, before we wrap, positions in any of the stocks you named?
Yeah, I got a bunch there. Probably, let's see, let's start with Micron. That's an easy one. NVIDIA, Western Digital, Intel. I think that's the major one. No, I don't have a position in CyberArk. I think I named most of them there. I don't have a position in Netflix or Amazon. I mentioned Facebook, I do. I don't think I mentioned Facebook, but I think that's the major ones.
I think you briefly mentioned about their CapEx plan, so I'll throw it.
Yes, I'll throw it in there.
And in case you mentioned it, I have a position in Google, so that always comes up in tech as well. So
yep, absolutely.
Okay, Joe, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun, and I hope that all goes well for you with these picks, and otherwise that you stay safe and healthy, and hope we get to do this again.
Thank you, Daniel. Likewise to you.